A Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves in a really significant book, I think. Melinda Gase's The Moment of Lift, Women's Empowerment, and Global Progress.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this is so much more than just a memoir about philanthropy. It really feels like an urgent global call to action.
Absolutely. It's really essential right now, I think, because she frames gender equity not as some kind of side issue, you know, not just a social justice thing.
Right.
She argues it's, well, fundamental. It's the prerequisite for societies to really flourish for everyone.
Exactly. Healthier, more prosperous, stable societies.
Yeah.
She says it starts here.
That's the engine, yeah.
So our mission for this deep dive is, well, to follow her thinking. Trace her journey in the book, and really try to uncover what she sees as the single most critical intervention, mm-hmm. the thing that can accelerate human progress. Where's that lever?
Yeah, where's the leverage point? And to get that, you really have to understand her, the author. Melinda Gates comes at this with a kind of powerful dual perspective. It blends analysis and empathy.
That's a great way to put it, because on one side, you've got the, you know, the super successful former Microsoft exec, background in computer science, economics from Duke, very analytical.
Thinks in systems, data, scale.
But definitely. But then she's also the co-chair of the Gates Foundation, deep in the world of massive global initiatives.
And that combination, that's what really gives the book its weight, I think. Her expertise isn't just theoretical, right? It's like two decades of having access to cutting-edge global data, all the research, combined with just countless hours on the ground, actually doing immersive field work.
She talks about literally sitting in the dirt, you know, talking with women in really remote villages, difficult urban slums all over the world.
Yeah, face to face.
And she's quite famous for grounding her arguments in that hard evidence, the data, the models. But she also says quite consistently that data isn't enough on its own. It doesn't drive change by itself.
Right. You need the stories.
You need those human connections, the personal stories, to actually build the empathy that makes people want to act. There's that head and heart thing she mentions.
Mm-hmm. The head understands, the heart motivates.
Precisely.
Which leads us right into the book's core idea, the central premise of The Moment of Lift. Her argument is that empowering women and girls, it's the single most powerful, most effective lever we have for lifting up, well, everyone. All of humanity.
I love that phrase, moment of lift. It really suggests this kind of exponential effect. Like when you remove those barriers holding women back, it's not just helping one person. You're actually unleashing this upward force. It benefits whole families, communities, even national economies. The entire system just gains altitude.
Exactly. It's a multiplier effect. And the book's structure sort of mirrors her own journey, doesn't it?
It does. It's partly a manifesto for empowerment, sure. But it's also quite practical, like a guide to effective philanthropy in some ways. And it's woven through with her own personal story, her memoir.
And it travels, you know. Geographically, you go from Silicon Valley boardrooms, where she talks about facing that male-dominated tech culture herself, all the way to villages in Niger and India.
Dusty roads, yeah.
But also emotionally, it charts her own evolution.
That's what I found really striking. How she evolved from being perhaps more purely data-driven, thinking about metrics and optimization.
Mm-hmm. The technologist view.
To becoming this really nuanced advocate, someone who deeply understands that, you know, culture, tradition, personal stories, they matter just as much as the numbers. Maybe more, sometimes.
And she methodically shows how interconnected all these big global challenges are. You can't really tackle poverty without addressing health.
Right.
Can't fix health without looking at education.
And none of it works without economic justice, legal rights.
But underlying all of that, she found there's one thing that really is the foundation, the starting point.
Okay, so let's dive into that, because this is where she really prioritizes. Gates argues, quite forcefully, that the absolute starting point for everything else is bodily autonomy.
Yes.
And fundamentally, that's enabled by access to family planning, to contraception. But why start there? You know, why isn't it education first, or maybe property rights? What's so unique about contraception as the leverage point?
That is the crucial question, isn't it? And what Gates realized through listening to women was that if a woman doesn't have control over her own body, her fertility, then she doesn't really have control over her time.
Ah, time, the ultimate resource.
Exactly. So access to contraception becomes this primary key. It unlocks everything else. A woman gets to decide when she has children, if she has children.
Which means she can stay in school longer.
Finish her education, maybe enter the workforce, earn an income. It gives her agency over her life's path.
And the power of that choice really comes through in the stories she shares.
Yeah.
The anecdotes are incredible.
Mm-hmm.
She talks about women in places like Malawi, the Philippines, the lengths they go to, walking for days sometimes.
Facing social stigma.
Huge stigma, just to get access to contraceptives.
Yeah.
Because they see it. They know it's the key to a better future for themselves, for their families.
That intrinsic understanding and that control over timing, over spacing births, leads right into the next pillar she discusses, maternal and newborn health.
Right, because when births are spaced further apart, the health outcomes, well, they just dramatically improve for both the mother and the child.
It's a simple equation almost, but it saves so many lives. A lot of the deaths that used to happen around childbirth just become preventable.
What I found really inspiring in that section was how often the solutions were actually quite low cost, low tech.
Yeah, not necessarily fancy equipment.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, she tells the story of Dr. Gary Darmstadt's work in Shivgar, India.
Yeah.
He didn't come in pushing expensive incubators. He worked with the local community, observed local traditions, and found that really simple practices made a huge difference. Things like kangaroo care, just skin-to-skin contact between mother and baby.
And delaying the baby's first bath.
Right. Simple things that dramatically cut infant mortality.
And the fascinating part there is that the intervention wasn't purely medical, was it? It was relational. It took humility.
Yes.
Respect for the community's knowledge. You can't just parachute in with solutions. You have to partner, listen, work within their context for it to stick.
Absolutely. That cultural sensitivity is key. Okay, so moving from health, the book then pivots pretty heavily towards education for girls. But specifically, it shines a really bright light on what she calls the invisible burden that women carry.
Mm-hmm. The unseen work.
Yeah, because the barrier to a girl getting educated isn't always just school fees, is it? Often it's the sheer weight of chores,
yeah.
Fetching water, caring for siblings.
Hours and hours of work before she even thinks about school, and safety too. Lack of safe toilets at school, dangerous journeys.
Which is where some of those smart, simple interventions come in again. She gives the example of providing bicycles to girls in India.
Right, such a practical thing.
Made the journey safer, faster.
Yeah.
Directly tackled those time and safety issues that were forcing girls to drop out.
Simple solution, massive impact.
But the biggest invisible inequity she discusses, the one that really hit home for me, was this concept of the time deficit.
Mm.
All the unpaid work.
Like care work, cooking, cleaning.
Emotional labor.
Yeah.
Planning.
Right.
All of it. It's essential work, right? Society literally couldn't function without it.
Absolutely essential.
And yet, it's completely unvalued in economic terms. Invisible.
It is the silent inequity. And it's what holds women back globally from participating more fully in public life in the paid economy.
And she connects this invisibility to some staggering numbers. I mean, the data she cites. If all this unpaid domestic and care work was actually valued, given an economic number.
Yeah.
It would add trillions of dollars to the global economy.
Mm-hmm.
Trillions. Like the size of a major country's entire GDP.
Wow. That really reframes it, doesn't it? It's not just the personal problem or a fairness issue. It's a massive systemic economic inefficiency. We're leaving huge value on the table.
And she makes it personal, too. She talks very openly about her own experiences, even with her high-flying career at Microsoft. Her struggles trying to balance the household duties that were just sort of expected of her.
Even in her marriage.
That's an incredibly demanding job. And that just underscores how universal this struggle is. It plays out differently, sure, but it's there in villages and boardrooms everywhere, that need for real partnership.
Yeah, that resonated. And then finally, she moves into the domain of legal rights and economic justice, focusing particularly on child marriage and the role of women in agriculture.
The child marriage stories are heartbreaking, but also show the power of change. She tells the story of Ruchi in India, who managed to fight against her own arranged marriage with support from her community, and then became an advocate herself, helping other girls.
It shows that change really can happen at the grassroots level, especially when women find their voice and get community backing. It's not just top-down policy.
Definitely not. And the economic justice part, focusing on women farmers, that feels critical too.
Hugely critical. Because women, especially across Africa and South Asia, they are the backbone of the agricultural sector. They do so much of the farming.
But they're systematically shut out from the resources they need.
Exactly. Unequal access to seeds, to credit, fertilizer, training, and crucially, land ownership. They often can't own the land they farm.
So closing that resource gap, it's not just about fairness for those women.
No, it's strategic. It's about global food security. It's about national economic growth. Yeah. Denying women farmers equal tools literally holds back entire countries. It's one of the clearest examples of that holding women down, holds everyone down idea.
That system level perspective really ties it all together, which brings us neatly to the key themes that emerge from all these different threads.
Okay. Well, the fundamental one, the one we keep coming back to, is that empowerment really starts with and depends on bodily autonomy.
Right. It's the non-negotiable foundation.
Everything else builds on that freedom to control your own life, starting with your own body.
And flowing from that, another key theme is the importance of what you called informed empathy, really seeking out and listening to stories that are different from our own experience.
Yeah, and Gates captures that so well in one of the book's really memorable lines. Can I share it?
Please do.
She says, "Data can open your eyes to the facts, but it is the human stories that move your heart. And it is the heart that moves your feet."
That's powerful. You need both, don't you? The head and the heart. The data shows you the scale, the scope of the problem.
But it's the story, the human face, that actually creates the will, the drive to do something about it, both personally and politically.
And what about that economic argument we touched on, the value of women's work? How does she crystallize that theme?
Well, she puts it as a direct challenge to how our systems currently operate. She writes, "What we are choosing to value is the key to the struggle. And the fact is that we have not chosen to value women's work."
Oof, that's blunt.
It is. It's a direct hit on the systemic devaluation, especially of that unpaid care work.
And the overall strategic vision, the big picture takeaway.
I think it's summed up in this line. If you want to lift a society up, you have to stop holding women down. It's the only way to get a full force lift.
So inequality isn't just unfair. It's like applying the brakes.
It's like trying to fly a plane with one wing tied down. It acts like a gravitational drag on everyone's potential.
Okay, so understanding these themes, these arguments, how do we apply this? What are the real-life applications we can take away from the book, maybe starting right in our own homes?
Well, she encourages something quite practical. Doing an audit of your own household.
An audit, okay.
Yeah, actually looking at who does what. The cleaning, cooking, childcare, planning, the mental load, the emotional labor, all of it. And then working actively towards a genuinely equitable distribution of that unpaid work.
So making the invisible visible, starting right there.
Exactly. Model the change you want to see, basically.
And then thinking about the workplace.
If you're in a position where you have some influence, the application is about advocating for structural changes. Things that make equality the easier path, the default.
Like what, specifically?
Like pushing for transparent pay scales so you can see if there are gaps. Advocating for paid family leave for everyone, not just mothers. Actively mentoring and sponsoring women into leadership roles. And just speaking up when you see bias in action.
Being an active ally.
Yes. And then in the wider community.
There, it's about supporting organizations, both local and global, that are actually doing the work on these proven interventions. The things the book champions.
Family planning access, girls' education initiatives, maybe microfinance programs for women farmers.
Exactly. But making sure those solutions are locally led. Remembering that Shivgar example, the best answers often come from within the community itself, respecting their culture.
That partnership approach again?
Right. And maybe the ultimate application underlying all of this is just practicing that informed empathy continuously. Keep seeking out stories, listening, recognizing our shared humanity, and maybe a shared responsibility.
So the final takeaway for me, the big lesson from this deep dive, is really internalizing that paradigm shift she presents. Gender equality isn't a zero-sum game. It's not about one group winning at another's expense.
No.
It's actually the most effective foundation we have for universal progress, for shared prosperity. When women are lifted, everyone is lifted.
Yeah, that's beautifully put. For me, what was maybe most surprising or inspiring was how she connected her own personal journey, her struggles, even within her own privileged position, balancing career and expectations.
Right, at Microsoft in her marriage.
How she connected that directly to the struggles of the women she met in completely different circumstances around the globe. It just shows how universal the root causes of inequality really are. They cut across class, across geography.
It proves the point, doesn't it?
It really does, and underscores that when women rise, truly, the whole world rises with them.
That is the moment of lift.
Thank you for joining us on this really essential deep dive into the moment of lift.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.